or new. I'm in a different mood, so different chance. Different chance for different strokes. Try these on for size. Go deep. Let the music sweep through you and become blissful. Feel it in every fiber of your beingness. Such joy. Get your mind out of the way. Let the music chant through you.
Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. 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 Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Vajamana. Radhe Govinda
Vajamana. Radhe Govinda
Vajamana. Vajamana Krishna Kanaya.
Vajamana Krishna Kanaya.
Vajamana Krishna 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 Kanaya. Vajamana Krishna 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 Kanaya.
Vajamana Krishna 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 Kanaya.
Vajamana Radhe 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 Govinda.
Vajamana
Krishna Kanaya Radhe Govinda, Krishna Kanaya Radhe Govinda.
Krishna Kanaya Radhe Govinda.
Govinda Krishna Kanaya
Radhe Govinda.
Recently, there's been a movement in consciousness regarding our Sangha, a movement of self-recognition and love by several people almost simultaneously. You know, once upon a time when I was a psychologist, I had a patient named Joel. Joel was a diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. He felt God in him all the time. He felt God surrounded him. And we could talk on the deepest matters and he'd understand. And I'd understand him. He had no defenses. He was open to his deepest layers. He talked matter-of-factly about God and about its deepest fears, much like we talk about what we had for lunch. No defenses, no disease, no distress. It was all the same to him. And there's so much to be learned. You talk to broken people. People that are broken to their very depths. Like a granite rock with crevices that reach down to the core and expose the deepest layers of that rock. We're all broken people in some way. Some far more defended than others. But in that brokenness is love. The deepest layers of ourself are exposed, the deepest hurts, the deepest needs, the deepest love, deepest desires. Little Eddie is here. Little Joe. little Cynthia, little Janet, little Joanne, little Tina, little Alan, Matthew. Those baby parts that were broken, never fully formed, that were rejected by ourselves, split off, isolated, hidden. Those parts are still there. And broken people, other broken people. We can see our own brokenness. And when they love us, we can accept our brokenness. And when we love them, they can accept their brokenness because it's precious. It's precious. Little Cynthia, little Janet, little Joe, little Matthew. The deep, deep hurt we felt. The humiliation. The shock. The loneliness. And then somebody loves us. We feel their love and they accept that. They accept our brokenness. They love our brokenness because it's the deepest part of us. And with them, we grow in trust. And we can let that brokenness out a little more, a little more, a little more. And it's accepted more. More and more. That brokenness reaches down to the very depths of our soul, where the soul transitions from phenomena into the unmanifest, into the absolute. Some people are so broken that when we look into them, we can see ourselves as the unmanifest, as the absolute, as the Godhead. Because the fractures go so deep. They go down to our very roots in the absolute. And so many of us here in our group can see that in each other. Can see little Alan. And love little Alan. We know what he's really like. No matter how he appears, we know deep down inside what Alan is like. We know what Joan is like. And Cynthia, and Janet, and Joanne, and Eddie, and Matthew. And all the others I can't see. Rich. Tina. Go inside and embrace that brokenness. Expose her and him. Let us love him and her so that you can love him or her. Oh, we broken people. We're so deep. We're so deep. We're so deep. And we see those depths in you. And I love you all for your brokenness. And I hope you see mine. That was my ode to the broken people. You're so precious to me. I love you all so much. I really do. Each week, my love grows. The more I know myself in this way, and the more I know you and the way you expose yourself to me in emails and posts and on the phone. I gave up writing medical reports and I found you, all of you. Thank God. Okay, can we have the second chant now? Sit with that. Loving yourself. Loving your brokenness and the brokenness in others. Thank God for our brokenness. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to see the infinite. Her own brokenness.
Thank you.
However, there's more to spirituality and fixing emotional brokenness. I think, though, until the brokenness is accepted and integrated and loved, there's always going to be an anchor dragging us back into the world to fix it. So I think we have to pursue a parallel process. One part of us exploring the infinite and the relationship between the I am. For example, by reading and following Nisargadatta and practicing meditation. And the other part by loving, simply loving, loving another so that we can love ourselves. It's really not that important being loved. It's much, much more important to love something or someone. Because at some point we recognize that love is us, it's our love, our own love. It's our basic nature. And we can identify with love. And when we do, there's ecstasy and bliss and self-acceptance. But Robert and Nisargadatta and Ramana taught there was something even beyond that, beyond fixing our brokenness, which is to know our roots in the unmanifest. The void of the void. The emptiness behind emptiness. Because the void and the emptiness we experience is not the true void or the true emptiness, which is us, our fundamental nature, our mystery. The absolute, which is us, is unseen, can never be seen. It's this ultimate state, this ultimate us underneath even the deepest brokenness, that is our goal. Our goal, if we want to transcend life and become immortal. And to know the basic nature of universal consciousness, which we are. Not the particular instantiation of our body-mind, but the principle of consciousness itself and beyond consciousness, our true nature, which observes consciousness. All this is known. If only we learn how to rest in ourself and the I am, which starts as a trickle, a feeling of energy in our heart that we exist. And then we find our sense of presence, and we love it, and it grows. And our sense of presence is enhanced if we love someone. It's filled up with energy, with love, and it expands, becomes more inclusive, until everything is the I am. Everything we witness is the I am. Everything we experience is the I am. And it's filled with love, and it becomes love itself, and then ecstasy. And then even ecstasy and love are transcended. And we know ourselves as the ultimate peace beyond it all. I have never, ever found a more effective teaching about the state and the borderline than Nisargadatta. And of all the books that he wrote, Prior to Consciousness is the strongest. And I want to continue reading like I have been, certain paragraphs from Prior to Consciousness that hammers home that Nisargadatta was no ordinary Advaita guru. He certainly wasn't a Neo-Advaitin guru. He's much deeper. And he's put so beautifully into words. So I'd like to read a few. It's page 15 of Prior to Consciousness. It's about pain. And this is a very important one. Listen to this carefully. In the body, the consciousness does the witnessing. The behavior is done by the three gunas. Consciousness is all-pervading, space-like, without form. If one has an illness or pain, is there a form to that? It is only a movement in consciousness. The knower of consciousness cannot feel the pain, and it is only because consciousness has identified itself with the body that the body feels pain. When consciousness is not there, even if the body is cut, there is no pain. So it is not the body which feels pain. When there is a disturbance in the balance of the five elements, illness comes, and the illness or pain is felt in consciousness, the consciousness. It's not felt in the body. It's felt by consciousness, which is us, until we learn that we are beyond consciousness. We're the observer of consciousness. So not only does the body not feel pain, it is consciousness which feels pain, which is different from the body, and it's different from us as the absolute. The waking and sleep states and the I am consciousness. These three are not your attributes, but the attributes of that chemical, which he calls the food. The process by which food gets transformed into the vital principle, into Shakti, into sentience. And we are all sentience. That's a plug. To what does the term or word birth apply? Is it not the birth of that which is in the body which makes it conscious? The chemical denotes the love of the self, which it has for itself, and of which it wants to continue. All experiences will be a means of suffering if one hasn't realized what they are. And here's the most important one. This is on love. Questioner. My fear is not being able to love or be loved. Maharaj says, please understand, feeling love for others consciously and deliberately cannot be done. That feeling of love must be understood, and then love will unfold itself. Love for the self, this consciousness, I am. Those who have understood this as true love have themselves become love. All has merged in them. The chemical which makes the body function is the smallest of the small and the biggest of the big. It contains the entire universe. It is itself love and God. That chemical, the consciousness, provides the light which enables the world to get on. That love is not individual love. The indwelling principle in all things is that love, the life force. Begin with this emotional love and you dwell in your beingness. No, begin with this emotional love and dwell in your beingness. In other words, love. and by loving dwell in your beingness. Whatever happens, happens in that which has been objectified in time and space. Whatever happens is that which has been objectified, not in the subject, the witness, which you are. None of the happenings are in you. In you, nothing has happened. It's out there in what has been objectified that the happening takes place. Whatever happens, happens in that which has been objectified in time and space. In you, there is no time and space. From complete absence has come plenty. From you, your source, the subject, has emptiness, the true emptiness, not the emptiness you perceive, but the true emptiness. From that vacuum, from that emptiness, from that nothingness, plenty has come. Plentifulness has come. The universe has arisen spontaneously. Out of emptiness, form springs forth. The body is born, takes its space, and then it goes. But the absolute is not affected. That eternal state prevails in spite of all happenings. Whatever tangible, invisible world there is merges into nothingness. However, that nothingness is also a state. So that nothingness also goes into the absolute state. The nothingness that you observe that form disappears into is not the real nothingness. It's only what you observe and you, as the true nothingness, observes. The true absence, the true emptiness, which cannot be witnessed or known. The true void, the true mystery that we are, that cannot be seen or known, or felt or touched, and is not born and does not die. The emptiness that we see, the void that we see, is a reflection of that. And it's into that reflection that the world fades every day when we go to sleep or when we die. But we are more empty than that. We are more nothing than that. And that's why being broken is so close to being the absolute. Do you understand that? Being broken is close to being nothing. And isn't that what we want in complete surrender to God or to someone else? Is to become nothing. To become absolutely nothing. To fall down at the feet of another or God or Guru and declare, do with me as you will, for I am nothing. I delight only in your happiness. Let me make you happy. And in my nothingness, I can be happy. I can rest. I can rest in my true nature as a non-entity. Questioner, I don't know. Why is it that I cannot know who I am? Maharaj, I can only know something different from me. How can something know itself when there is nothing with which to compare? It is alone, without identity, without attributes. We can only talk about it at the phenomenal stage. Our true nature cannot be talked about or known. We can only talk about the phenomenal stage, the manifestation, and by then it's too late. We have nothing to do with that happeningness, with the activities. We are the witness. And only those who are broken to the deepest depths and can surrender completely can know that emptiness, that true emptiness. Consciousness is a temporary condition which has come upon the total, timeless, spaceless, and changeless state. It is a happening which has come and which will disappear. This psychosomatic bundle which is born will suffer and enjoy during its allotted span, so long as I know that I am not the one who experiences, but I am the knower. Then how am I concerned? It is perfectly clear I merely watch the body, mind, and consciousness laugh or suffer. In suffering, it may cry out all right. If it is enjoying, it may laugh. But I know it is a temporary thing. If it wants to go, let it go. While I'm talking to you, imparting knowledge, at the same time I'm feeling unbearable pain. If it becomes a little more unbearable, I may whimper. It can do what it likes, I'm not concerned. So long as you have not known what this consciousness is, you will fear death. But when you really understand what this consciousness is, then the fear leaves. The idea of dying will also go. This consciousness is time-bound, but the knower of the consciousness is eternal, the absolute. Don't say that you are an individual. Just stay in the beingness. The whole problem is the sense of being a separate entity. Once that subsides, it's true bliss. That is true bliss. With the rising of the I Am, the whole of manifestation takes place. In any activity, that which witnesses the I Am, that which is doing all this, is Maya. The tendencies, the attributes. This is what I'm trying to tell you. But you want something else? Something that is in the manifestation. You want knowledge. The knowledge I am is new, but it is not real. The real I am not telling you. Words negate that. Whatever I'm telling you is not the truth, because it has come out of the I am. The truth is beyond expression and is beyond the I am. You are going all over amassing knowledge for an individual. This amassing of knowledge is not going to help you because it's in a dream. Now let's have hypnosis. How about Sri Krishna Govinda? And then we'll talk. Listen to the chant. This is so important. This can be your salvation. This is the Kali Yuga. And they said the Kali Yuga, the way to enlightenment is through chanting, through music. This is what the Hare Krishnas are all about. And the devotion of Muktananda is all about these chants. Feel them in your heart. Let them awaken you to your love. during the last week or two. There's a subgroup of you who have begun communicating with each other about your brokenness. That's very powerful, the movement. Edgy's Angels. Edgy's lucky to have these angels. They teach him so much. You know, the problem is this area of human vulnerability, of brokenness, of neediness, clinginess, hatred, really hasn't been explored by many teachers. It's always shoved to the side. Very few teachers explore it. One of them was Osho. Another one was Maizumi Roshi, who was extremely vulnerable in everyday life. Would get drunk and pound on the floor with his foot because the woman downstairs was making too much noise when he was trying to meditate. And then he broke his foot and he apologized for the next 2 weeks for being such a jerk. He had his students help him in on crutches and giving this great show of being in pain and then talk about what a jerk he was. And he did this over and over and over. And I thought he was such a jerk back then. But I see how brave he was to expose himself and his vulnerabilities and his foibles in front of his entire satsang, in front of 40 or 50 people at a time, and the talks are transcribed so hundreds would know about it. He was fearless in exposing his vulnerabilities. And I didn't appreciate it because I was looking for a perfect guru, one who had transcended life. But instead, he fully enjoyed and was participating in life and alcoholism. While Rajneesh and Osho was fully involved with women, nitrous oxide, and Valium, he went mad. His method drove him mad. Full involvement, total wild abandonment in the humanness, along with drugs and being the center of attention, drove him mad. But Maizumi never went mad. But he died very young, like 55, from a heart attack. So much vulnerability, you know? And so this is a dangerous way. This is a dangerous way, the way of the bhakti. The way of opening yourself up into love and us, hatred and the small little kid that screams and rants and cries. Wants its mommy, daddy, attention, recognition. And all so many that follow all of these teachers, they follow them directly into consciousness itself and avoid all of that shit inside. And that shit is always tugging on them the rest of their lives until they go in and fix it. Fortunately, I have my angels that keep pulling me into my own shit. Yes.
I have a question. This path, though it's a very hard one, from my perspective, it appears that doing it this way, though it seems very hard and very long, will take us far deeper, much deeper quicker than any other path.
And more quickly, because there's so much energy involved in it. Most people who just practice meditation just gently fade away into nothingness until they're nobody and nothing after 15 or 20 years. And then they might take a shower and find out that there was no self left whatsoever and awaken, but they have no energy with which to express it. But this way, you take all of you, the screaming wild child, the horrors that he's seen, the rages he's felt, the deep need, the longing, and it's all incorporated in the search. You become integrated and the brokenness leads you to more easily see the deepest voids, and then even to go beyond the voids that we can see to the void that we are, the emptiness we are, or the emptiness we is. It's much more powerful this way. I feel it. That's why I've abandoned the Robert sort of slow way of self-inquiry into the more wild way of Nisargadatta's Nisargadatta's loving the I am and gradually having the I am to accept and become part of everything. I mean, the I am starts as something tiny that you feel, and it grows and grows and it grows until it's your entire sense of presence, and the sense of presence expands until it includes all of the universe, all of consciousness, and all of the consciousness becomes I am. And that I am is seen to have a certain flavor, a sweetness, a lovingness, an acceptance, and a nothingness. You feel absolutely certain you are nothing, that this is just a show you're watching, and you're free. Free forever. What a trip. I think I'm going to have a memorial to Maizumi sometime, because I only now recognize how great he was. He was the seventh generation Zen priest of Soto priests, seven generations. He had attained the highest recognition in Japan for many, many teachers, and came to the United States, had many relationships with his female students because, as he said, he could. That was his justification. He could. He was an alcoholic and completely open. He'd be completely open. I'd go to Darshan with him, and I was staying at a different Zen center, the International Buddhist Meditation Center, led by Dr. Tianan. And Maizumi had stayed to me, go face to face for Darshan, and you question and answer period, just talk to the teacher. And he'd come in, I'd sit down, he said, I understand that Dr. Tianan has just bought a fourth house. Is that true? And he said, yeah, we just got this new house. We added, it's number four now. He says, you know, we just bought a house last week ourselves. We have five. So transparent. And I was used as the communication link between the two. So much fun to see the vulnerabilities of teachers and what they're really like. Except, of course, the vaunted Ramana, who everybody loves, and everybody has this perfect picture of the perfect guru without ever having met the man. Okay, let's do a last chance, and then we'll fade away into oblivion. How about the most beautiful of all, Bhaja Govindam? I think that's the one that everybody likes so well, isn't it? Bhaja Govindam? Or shall we do a Yogananda one? I will sing thy name.
I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with thine. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with thine. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with thine. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name.
to me, come to me, oh come to me. Oh my Guru, come to me, come to me, oh come to me. Oh my Guru, come to me, come to me, oh come to me. Oh my Guru, come to me. To me, come to me, oh come to me. Oh my Guru, come to me, come to me, oh come to me. Oh my Guru, come to me, come to me, oh come to me. Oh my Guru, come to me.